The 9 Years Podcast is brought to you in association with Freddie Flaxman. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 307 of the 9 Years Podcast. I am Nick Draper, joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. Thank you very much for downloading the show this week. We shall be talking about the 0-0 draw with Crewe, some January transfer window rumours, not really ones for rumour and innuendo, but it's January, it's transfer window, sort of comes with the territory. We're looking back at the successful Women's FA Cup victory on Sunday, as well as having a quick look at our finances and a quick discussion about that, along with all the other usual bits and pieces, Jackson 5, allocated to our game with Bradford City on the weekend. Stu, let's go straight into it. We probably should have guessed a 0-0 draw. We both actually said it would be a draw with Crewe last week. We had a feeling it was going to be a draw. We probably should have gone for 0-0, given we struggled to create chances. Crewe are the joint second lowest goal scorers in League Two. Only Gillingham have scored fewer goals in the league than Crewe this season. We were missing players. They were missing their best striker. And I think by the end of it, if you wanted a definition of a 0-0 draw, that was it.
Yeah. I didn't think we were going to lose two on the bounce. I really didn't think that was going to be the case. So I felt we would go there to not lose. In the end, obviously losing a few players late on, losing obviously our captain Alex Woodyard, Riley Towler, and a few players, Zach Robinson obviously coming back from loan. I think we just weren't going to lose, and the game was a non-event, to be honest with you. I think in the end we were happy to take a point. Crewe didn't have enough to beat us, and we both took a point on and moved on to the next weekend.
We reverted to the much loved 3-5-2 formation. Do you think that's the plan going forward, or was that just the most sensible approach with the personnel we had?
Difficult to know, isn't it? We've not gone back to that many times. Obviously, people will probably look at the fact that Alex Pearce was back, and he, when he was fit, we played in a three. So, hey, look, it could be that case. But I think it was just the most effective that we had. We didn't really have much wide in terms of, obviously, Avea being out. That width was a bit restricted on that. I really don't mind the three because it means we can play with the wing backs. And I think Hussein Belair and Jack Curry are good out wide. I think they're better going forward, if I'm being truthful, than defending. And that's not that they're bad defending, but I think they give us good width. Probably was what was available, but we'll probably see against Bradford, won't we, if Alex Pearce looks like now he will get a run again. So we'll be interested to see if we stay with the three.
He got good reviews from what I read, Mr. Pearce.
He was good. I think, Joe, I think when he was playing, we weren't playing very well, were we? Mm. And a lot's made out of Lee Brown and Alex Pearce liking to pass to each other. And I think that goes before them, doesn't it? But to be honest with you, I thought he did really well. I was pleased with what he'd done, and he's a good defender. I think he is associated with the bad run that we had at the start of the season. I think that's a bit harsh. And he's got lots of experience. So it's not a bad replacement. Obviously, Riley Towler was a big loss. But Alex Pearce is not exactly a bad replacement.
No, I don't think so at all, to be honest with you. And as you say, very experienced. He's not going to get flustered. He's not going to, you know what I mean? Nothing's going to surprise him. He's been there, seen it, been through it, done it. And, I mean, hey, look, it all comes back, for me, Stu, this all comes back down, and we'll talk about recruitment in a second, but this all comes back down to expectations, isn't it? We went into this season, 27 games, winless run. For me, this season was all about just stabilising, making sure we're happy, settled, and what have you, and then we can push on again. So I think people are perhaps looking at the poor start. Alex Pearce was involved in that. They're thinking they want playoffs and pushing for promotion and things like that, whereas I'm not sure my head is there. So I'm quite happy. I thought he was a sensible addition. I'm happy with him. And now that Riley Towler's gone back as well, I think you're right, Stu. We'll see a lot more of him. We're probably going to, if we go back to the 3-5-2, I agree with you. It makes sense for me because of the wingbacks. And I think that's a real strength with, as we spoke last week about Jack Curry and Belair. And we just said there's going to be somebody missing out somewhere along the line. And who Nathan Yeung-Koon seems to be the obvious one that misses. Well, maybe not, actually. Maybe, I don't know, Ethan Chislett, Harry Pell, one of those has got to drop somewhere along the line. If Ayoub is still going to be featuring for us, maybe, I don't know. Do you see what I mean? Suddenly, all of a sudden, you have dilemmas. You think, how's this best going to work? How's that midfield three going to work? Does Nathan Yeung-Koon's drop out and Ayoub play like he did at the start of the season, just sort of behind Josh Davison? It's good problems to have, I guess, but we seem to have, square pegs, perhaps.
Yeah, I think Dwayne Jackson will probably be looking to try and find a way of including Nathan Yeung-Koon's, Ethan Chislett. We've said last week, didn't we, whether you can include them in the same side is not sure. But then equally, we need to have options off the bench, don't we, as well? So it's not the worst thing in the world on that side. Harry Pell, I think we need to play further forward. I've got totally wrong on that. I thought he'd be better in midfield, but I think we lose that height and the legs and stuff like that from there. Interesting on Saturday, even though they played the wing backs, they didn't really get forward that much. It didn't feel like there was much license to join in. So probably more of a 5 rather than probably a 5-3-2 rather than a 3-5-2. But you expect at home to give license. But I'm convinced we just didn't want to lose it. And from what I saw of the game, he didn't miss much.
The very end of the game, Crew had a chance. Now, not watching the game live, but following updates, when I got the updates that Crew had this huge chance in the last minute, I was thinking, and I was like, should have scored it, should have won the game, da, da, da. When I saw it, I don't think it's that good a chance. I think it's all right, but I don't think the player is ever likely to score from that position with the height of the cross coming in. I don't know what you thought about that.
The pace on it was too much, wasn't it? Mm. And if we think that's a chance, then maybe Crew think they got a Carl Hudlin because we expected him to head everything, didn't he? Whatever, if it was in whatever airspace it was in, we expected him to get on the end of it, didn't we? Mm. Yeah, that was a chance. Although it did lead to a funny moment that I know you and I have disagreed on with a bit of character. Or play acting, or whatever you want to call it, but I just think you're getting old in your old age.
Oh, Stu, I tell you. So what we're talking about here is so the Crew player is Sambo, isn't it? And he's not popular amongst the Crew fans. So I think you might be, what you say there about Hudson is perhaps quite true about Crew fans who, they want to make it seem like a bit of a gilt-edged must-score chance when it really wasn't, just so they get an excuse to go, oh, this player is rubbish, we need another striker, da-da-da-da. Mm. What follows it, Lee Brown gets right in his face and sort of has a bit of a go at him. Not an angry go or anything like that. It's clearly he's sort of being playful or, a bit of a laugh with him, the way he sort of is mocking him.
Yeah, he laughed at him.
Yeah. And then he gives him a little shove, which I'm not sure why. And then the Crew lad just sort of puts his arm around to sort of pull him towards him. And Lee Brown all of a sudden loses the power of, turns into a Paul Alcock and can't keep his balance as he heads back to the goal. Do you think Lee Brown, when he feels the tug behind him, do you actually think his initial reaction is, oh, I could throw myself over here and get him in trouble? And then he thinks better of it when he realises there's nothing there.
Possibly. I reckon there have been some verbals going on beforehand. I think that was probably more what it was. The funny thing is, I just find him funny. I find that, sometimes it's serious night type, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Yes, Lee Brown can wind anybody up, and him and Harry Pell on the same team is a sight to, hopefully it's a sight that we will enjoy it because it will wind up a lot of people. I thought it was a bit of harmless fun. If judging him wrong, if he'd gone over and held his, done a Harry Pell, let's be honest with you, was it against Grimsby or something, and held his face and stuff like that, then I'd have been a bit, that's going a bit too far. Mm. But I just saw it as some playful fun.
I just thought in the 91st minute or whatever, things could have gone very different. Don't forget, he was already on a booking. So a particularly officious draconian referee or linesman might have seen that little push and gone, oh, do you know what?
Maybe Lee Brown was just happy that he was going to get a clean sheet bonus and he was just in a good mood.
Does he get a clean sheet bonus?
Well, I don't know. In football manager, everyone gets a clean sheet bonus. Crikey. I'm playing football manager at the moment. Their contracts are ridiculous. I'm getting players who want to be having an unused sub.
Oh, jeez.
Get a life. Over. Get a life. Anyway, as you can tell, I'm playing football manager at the moment. It's mate, my brain hurts.
Do you know what? I remember the days playing football manager with those contract negotiations where you'd be like going through all the different bonuses, like appearance fee, clean sheet, bonus, goal, but all these. Yeah, it's hard work. So I'd be interested to know, though, if our defenders are on a clean sheet bonus or what bonus structure is. But we're just owners, so we'll probably never know.
I would have thought so. I think most days, you have extension clause and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be surprised. But you're right. We don't get to know the ins and outs of people's contracts, rightly so. But it would be nice sometimes to have a bit of an overview of what we have offered or stuff like that.
We'll get onto finances a bit more in a moment. I don't think there's much more we can add about the Crewe game. I'd say a 0-0 draw in January between two currently mid-table sides. Yeah, that's what football's about sometimes, isn't it? So well done to the 200 or so that travelled at short notice as well, because it was rearranged quite not so long ago.
And train strikes as well. So yeah, they've done very well.
Of course. January transfer window then, we talked, is the 3-5-2 to stay? Will we recruit in line with that? What's Ayuba Sale going to do if he fits into this team? Does he not? Whatever. I mean, all sorts of rumour and innuendo, Stu, but I don't think we've got anything concrete to offer anybody at this particular stage, I'm afraid. Last we had, as we know, was, as we said last week, in the departure of Riley Towler, Alex Woodyard, we believe we just believe it's a one game sort of thing, just to rest and look after a little bit of a knock. So we're expecting him back next week.
Yeah, I believe it's just being sensible. And you know what, it's been sensible as well. We don't want to lose him. We saw through the summer of not him breaking down. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, very sensible to do that. And obviously George Marsh come in and done the job. But we expect him hopefully back for this Saturday against Bradford.
Yeah, and Ayuba Sale, as far as I know, is still under the weather as he was. Well, my understanding is this Jew's coming to, we were hoping to get him to play at Sutton, and it was a late call that meant he couldn't, and that perhaps means he's a little bit sick, and that'll take a little while to recover. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, very quiet on that, isn't it? Not much really about him. Hey, look, January window, you worry because he is an asset that will be looked at. Hey, look, do you know what? In all seriousness, if he's not involved on Saturday against Bradford, then there's probably something more. But I'll be looking at the team sheet very closely to see whether he is involved. I'm hoping he is.
Yes, as I think we all will be. Right, finances. I want to just talk on this very quickly, if I may. Kieran Maguire of the Price of Football podcast put out a couple of tweets in the week, or earlier this week, Monday, in fact, reviewing AFCW PLC accounts for the year end 2021-2022. That's really quite difficult to say sometimes. He made some observations. First one being that revenue has gone up for us across from the previous year, up £3 million. That was obviously due to ticket sales and catering and conference and all that business that we didn't have. Well, not only did we not have at King's Meadow to the extent, but also I guess we didn't have at all, thinking about it, for the year before. Yeah, for the year before these accounts, yeah, we'd have had nothing.
Yeah.
So that would explain that one. Operating losses fell £300,000 to £850,000. So that to me reads operating losses of £850,000. He says we would have broken even or been close to breaking even had it not been for the stadium costs. And then he references the player sales. We sold £750,000 worth of players, which would have been Matthew Cox and, he says, Ollie Palmer.
Yeah, because it wouldn't include Jack Rizzoni just yet, would it? Because that would be next year's finances. Yeah.
So, but I mean, I was thinking that Ollie Palmer would account for that. When it says operating losses fell £300,000 to £850,000, that means that for me, the year before, our operating losses were £1.15 million. So actually, it's come down to £850,000 because of the sale of Palmer, if I've got my maths right, because we believe it was in the region of £300,000.
Yeah, I believe so. Don't forget also, we did sell some youth players as well, ones that probably didn't touch, you know, haven't got anywhere near the first team. Again, I'm not too sure what year they will come in, because I think they were very similar sort of timings to Jack Redoni. But, you know, we do lose players in the academy, 16s, 15s, 16s, that we don't see. You know, Leo Carstein's a perfect example.
Yeah.
So you might find a few are inclusive in that. But yeah, obviously, you know, most of our fees are undisclosed, aren't they? So it's sort of breaking it down. But judging by the financial side of it, yeah, we would have broken even apart from that. And I think that's where we were, wasn't it? You know, in terms of, I think when Mick Buckley was talking about it before, you know, the sales did help us then have a competitive budget on that side of it, even though it's not as competitive as first thought.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. It was not as competitive as we first thought going into this season. Thinking previously, this was the old model of Wimbledon FC, wasn't it? That, you know, sign players from smaller clubs from non-league and sell them on for a lot more money. And it's still a risky strategy. It's hard. It's particularly hard for us now. I know you've referenced there someone like Leo Carseldine, but in this era, if I've got this right, of the elite player performance plan and all that business, there is a ceiling to how much we can actually gain from these younger players, which didn't used to exist, which actually limits how much we can get for some of them. And there's no guarantee you're always going to be able to get these fees. I mean, Redoni was fantastic. We are expecting, as we said last week, Jack Curry, Hussein Bilal, Ayuba Sow, quite how much they're going to bring into us. We're not sure. And then you've got the pressure on to keep doing it year on year. So it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, the EPP does. Hey, look, that was put in years ago to help the Premier League clubs. It doesn't help you. It doesn't really do much to be honest. Obviously, when they're, you know, there's only so, there's like a ceiling. I think we're in, I know Peterborough, they've gone up a level. I think they've gone up to level two. I think we're level three from the top of my head. They've gone up to level two because as you go up the levels, then compensation becomes a little bit more. But it's not earth shattering. The key thing is to get your youth players into your first team, get them on pro contracts, get them on, you know, look, we put Abasal on a three-year contract, didn't we? Robbo was able to do that. I think Jack Curry and Hussein Bailo are similar. So that's the trick. And we may have, you know, I've said it for a little while, we may have to change our model. We can't keep losing goalkeepers as we do. We might have to chuck goalkeepers in a bit earlier. You know, give them that sort of, that, you know, something to bite on really and go, look, you can get a pro contract. We give you a 2+1 year deal. Means we're protected. The problem you've got is youth players are unpredictable. You know, for every Hussein Bailo, there might be a player who doesn't make it. And if you're giving them two plus one year contracts, then, you know, you're in trouble. So it's a difficult one. But I think that's the only way we make it work. But you're right. You know, we are relying on our players being sold to make up the shortfall. But then, you know, flip it that way. You know, we are going to sell Abasal eventually, either in this window or the summer window. We've got to be looking for players like Josh Davison. You know, Josh Davison, what, 150k rumoured to be? Mm-hmm. You could argue now that his sell-on value is at least that and probably another 100k, mm-hmm. for Armour's sake. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's really important what we buy. We've got to buy players at an age where they've got a sell-on value, and then we should be okay. You know, if you look in the squad at the moment, you've probably got, what, four or five players that have got value. If we were going to go into administration tomorrow, this is what we've got. You know, we've got a debt on the stadium and the interest on the loans, on the bonds, etc. That's gonna you know, muck us up until we get more money.
I mean, the point about the bonds you make there is exactly what Kieran follows up in on his tweets. He says, you know, we have a strong balance sheet, plenty of property assets. And over £2.7 million in the bank, apparently. Apparently. This is where, because I'm not a financial person, I need to get some people on to explain this. In fact, there's probably going to be a queue of people wanting to come on the podcast and put me right as I make some further comments on this. Because the next bit is a club funded by a variety of loans, including the Plough Lane bond, and shareholder contributions. It later goes on to say that we took some money, I believe, from the EFL. We borrowed from the EFL, interest paid by the Premier League, and also then Cherry Red Records, as you would expect, for £500,000. So my point here was, when I look at these figures, and yes, we talk about perhaps being financing the squad through player sales, but we're still very much in a position that every other football club in the country seems to be in, which is we are funded by money that perhaps we're not expecting to give back. I know we've got the Plough Lane bond. I know that's going to be repaid and everything. I'm not saying it's not going to pay back before anyone gets worried about that. But clearly the other thing that is mentioned here is shareholder contributions. And of course they've got a right to, they've got their stake and they can take that back out and stuff like that. But isn't this every other football club's model at the moment, where people are putting money in and there's no guarantee it's going to come back out? And unfortunately, this isn't about, this isn't me thinking actually about us exclusively. This is me thinking about the football pyramid as a whole, the league system. It's a wholly unsustainable system, because the levels of money that people have to put in just to keep you competitive in the first team, at first team level. And there's lots of talk. We know about a regulator coming in. These things keep being spoken about. We know about Fair Game Project. There's movement on this regulator. A lot of prominent journalists, football journalists, are really pushing the case for it as well. But I don't think it's going to make any difference. If you're still in this, if we're in this realm that we're at, where, you know, Premier League clubs are beyond, you can't really reach them because of the levels of finance involved there. What happens is they start paying their players really absurd, hugely high amounts of money. And then you've got the, they were all rubbishing recently, the trickle-down economics. But this is evidence for me that this is what happens, because all of a sudden what you're seeing is clubs below are not so much trickling down, but they're trying to keep up with what's above. So their wages and their costs go up. And then in turn, League One wages and so on. And that's where we find ourselves now. So a regulator coming in, even when we've got ourselves focusing on and working off contributions from shareholders and loans and what have you, it just seems like everything in football needs a whole big reset, because we're going to keep having to, I don't know, almost like try and turn ourselves inside out just to keep up with where are we at the moment? A lower half League Two budget.
Yeah, and the problem is you have expectation from fans, don't you? And we're no different.
Well, no, not so.
The window's just open, and we've got fans asking, are we going to spend money? Well, we don't really have it. We might be cash. I wouldn't say we're cash rich, but if we have that money in the bank, that's not, you know, that's all we need to be paying back, like, you know, bonds, etc., and so forth. But yeah, there's talk at the moment, the Premier League wanting to put in reserve teams to the Carabao Cup. Or the, the League Cup and the FA Cup not having replays. Now, what will happen with that? No doubt, they will offer more money in terms of TV money. They will offer a bigger percentage, not much. If you look at the percentage of football money, it comes down to nothing. But that will hit the clubs. But the clubs won't save that. The clubs will just end up spending that, and the wages will go up. So that's your problem. That's your problem. You know, everyone's trying to, there's no, an independent regulation, I think, will come in. I think they're saying it's going to be part of the King's speech next year, which they will mean it will, I mean, a Tracy Crouch regulator. I like the idea of having a real-time financial picture of clubs, so that, you know, because clubs that spend ridiculous amounts of money, you know, you don't find out until a year later when they're in administration. Mm. So I like the live-time view of finances. But let's not kid ourselves, you know, we're no different. You know, we're a fans-owned club, fans-owned club. We're trying to, you know, we are trying to compete in League Two at the moment. And, you know, judging by what it looks like, we are a mid-table budget. So we've got to do things differently. That's why Danny Macklin's come in, to see if we can, you know, as they call, sweat the stadium and get it more productive. That hopefully, you know, but ultimately we need to clear off the bonds. You know, we need to clear our debt. Our debt is a bonds. But my feeling is that we're just gonna extend the bonds, look for more shareholders. You know, Don Strasbourg have already said it about maybe looking at what percentage of ownership we have, just to dilute it a little bit. So, hey, look, we're trying, but let's not kid ourselves. It's not easy. And we're showing that a fans owned club has the same problems as lots of other clubs. We just don't have someone bankrolling us and putting money in.
I'm not sure I'm going to add to that now, Stuart. So I'd say Kieran Maguire, then we're recording this on Wednesday evening. And I believe there is another Price of Football podcast coming out on Thursday this week. So, and we will be spoken about on that. I don't know to what degree and how long, but we are on their list of topics for that. So you can probably access that now. If you're listening to this now, that should be available for you. It will be available some point on Thursday. What will be that? Thursday the 12th. So check that out and see what Kieran says in that. Because it shed a little bit more light on things, certainly more than I can. But yeah, I think the overall point stands.
We toyed with the idea. We actually did have Kevin Maguire agree to come on our podcast many years ago. I approached him and he was fine. At the time, we decided not to because our finances weren't as clear and we didn't want to be fair. We didn't want to feel that we were trying to poke holes in our finances, and we didn't go with that. But you know, it's something we could probably, I think Kieran's more than happy to come onto the podcast to explain it. I think what would help, you know, clubs like Plymouth and Swindon do a really good breakdown in layman terms, in English. Rather than financial talk. And, you know, I think that would be good if we can, you know, break down a little bit. But it's difficult. You know, not many people are interested in finances, are they, in terms of those end-of-year reports? I read them. I'm like you. I pick up certain headlines, but I'm sure I miss things. And the Kieran Maguire thing was interesting because normally he does it over sort of like 8, 9, 10 tweets. But I think he did it about 3 or 4 for us. So whether it wasn't much in there or wasn't much to worry about, say that we were asset rich, that's the stadium, and we are doing all we can, aren't we, to not put anything, you know, no mortgage or anything against security of the stadium. So yes, we have that, but we are very, very reluctant to put that as any guarantee.
Should also just point out, yes, Kieran Maguire, not to be confused with Kevin Maguire, of course, who is the AFC Wimbledon season ticket holder. I believe he's normally a Sunderland fan, but lives down here, works for the Daily Mirror. And let's not get into the politics of it, but yeah, don't confuse the two. Right, very quickly, Stu, because I would like to bring back on that side of it this week, but before we do that, the women, you went to see the women on Sunday. They beat Gillingham 1-0 in the FA Women's FA Cup, or as I like to call it, the People's FA Cup, to avoid any awkward conversations.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, finally, third time lucky for the women's team. They were trying, obviously, play at Plough Lane, got postponed twice. So this was first time lucky. Really enjoyed it. I went because I just wanted to go and watch a game of football at Plough Lane without really... Sometimes, hey, look, I'm not blaming on drummers. Game of football, and the women's game is great because you don't get any play acting, you don't get any cheating, you get good sportsmanship. And you know what? Really good game of football. Really enjoyed it. Competitive. Gillingham are a league above. And they were decent. Really good performances. Really good performance by the women's team. Faye Baker, excellent save. First half, there's saved. I literally jumped out of my seat. It was a breathtaking save. But yeah, subs on in the second made a difference. And a 1-0 win. Gillingham missed chance literally on the final whistle, hit a post and someone skied it. And if there were away fans in the north stand, they would have been ducking and diving for cover because they literally tried to take them all out. I was pleased because I was a bit cold. It was wet and cold. Didn't really fancy another half an hour of extra time and penalties on there. Plough Lane, yeah, east stand now is what's being used. So they're using the east stand only. Which I quite like. I hadn't sat in the East End before. Really good view. And good when it rains because the West End obviously has a bigger roof. So the East End didn't get wet at all. I had the bars open. Yeah, do you know what? Really good. If you want to go, do you know what? If Wimbledon have lost or get division, go watch someone's team. If Plough Lane or Carl Shorten, it's really nice, I'll be truthful. And at the end of the game, The woman's come over to the East Stand, all signed autographs, selfies, approachable. I didn't want to be like an old man, trying to get a selfie with one of the women's team, do you know what I mean? So I stayed away from that. But yeah, just a really good vibe about it. And really enjoyable. They play now Charlton Athletic. I think week commencing or scheduled for Sunday the 29th of January. But hey, look, I get there. It's enjoyable, and the standard is really good. So yeah, get along there if you can.
A quick 3 minutes, Stu, on that side of it this week. I just want to talk about New Year's resolutions. Have you got any New Year's resolutions?
No, I don't really believe in them, to be honest with you.
Thank you. I am the same, yeah. This is why I wanted to bring it up, because it annoys me. Yeah, it annoys me. You could do this at any point of the year. If you want to change your life and make it for the better, you know what the best day to start is? Today. And today doesn't have to be January the 1st. Could be anything, apart from February the 30th, because that doesn't exist.
Yeah, or maybe not on Valentine's Day or your anniversary, wedding anniversary. You know,
yeah, true.
New Year to me is a bit boring, to be honest with you. The only thing that resolution I'll probably take is to remember it's 2023 and not 2022, as I keep putting 2022 on things.
I'm well impressed on that score, Stu, because every PowerPoint I've had to do so far this year since the kids have gone back, I've remembered 2023. There's nothing worse, honestly, Stu, there's nothing worse when you write the date on the board in January, or you've put it on a PowerPoint or anything, and there's always one that puts their hand up and goes, "Oh, sir, you've put 2021 and it's 2022. I was like, oh, really annoyed. When they get one over on you like that, it's the worst thing. It's actually the worst thing about teaching. Well, no, the 80-hour weeks are the worst thing about teaching. No, wet breaks are the worst thing about actually teaching. But I'm similar. Not just New Year's resolutions, Stu. All this dry January, veganuary, isn't even a thing. If you're doing veganuary or veganuary or however you want to say it, you're not even making it to the end of January because you won't have enough energy to get you through the month. It's ridiculous. All these themed months they have, they really bug me. You know, like, I don't know. I actually don't know. Off the top of my head, I can't think of something, but you always get them. You know, like, I don't know, No Cheese March or, you know, horse riding June or whatever they call it. I don't know, but it's just wild.
You know what? I think it was on the weekend where there was men wearing just underpants. It was like a no trousers day or something.
No trousers tube. Yeah, all these bloody things, yeah.
What's that all about? Do you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, I imagine Loose Women had a fun day with that, didn't they? I mean, Loose Women in terms of the programme, not Loose Women on the underground.
Loose people.
Anyway, yeah, but it's just like, yeah, you got to do something in it. It's just like, hey, look, all I know is Saturday is my pie day, or, you know, Naked Chips Day. I can live with that. That's, you know, I can do with that.
You said chips.
You know, or watch Women and Win Day. But yeah, it just feels like every day's got something. All I know is that I wake up, I'm just see if it's not a train strike, because like every day is a train strike, isn't it? But anyway, it's not got political.
Train strike Tuesdays.
Train strike Wednesday, train strike Thursday. It'd be better if they just tell me when the trains are running. I was going to get a train on Sunday, and the first thing I thought is, oh, the train's running, I'll get a bus. I've got a bus in the end because I just feel safer with buses.
Yeah.
So maybe I can just tell when the actual trains are running. That would be helpful.
Maybe they should call it Train Strike 2023. That seems to be every public sector is striking this year. But anyway, right.
Yes, very quick
go of Jackson 5. Stu, last week we spoke about
Cruella.
Well, you did all right, I think. No, you weren't. No, last week was bad. Last week was bad.
Yeah.
But we established that we played Crewe as Wimbledon FC this millennium. Okay, so in post 2000, we've played Wimbledon FC, played a league game against Crewe, or a few. Anyway,
yeah.
Bradford City, our opponents on Saturday, we've played Wimbledon FC, played in a league game post 2000, this millennium. Both in the Premier for Bradford, it was both in the Premier League and then Nationwide League Division One. My question is, which other five current League Two teams did Wimbledon FC play in league action this millennium or this century? Century or millennium, the question and the answers are the same.
Oldham.
Oldham, no, they're not in League Two.
Who do we play as a league club? Sorry, did it tell you a question again? Sorry, I'm confused.
So current League Two teams that Wimbledon FC played in league games this millennium. So basically between January the 1st, 2000, and let's say like May the 30th, 2002.
Who's in League Two? That's a question and a half, isn't it? Leighton Orient?
No. Four more guesses.
Oh, dear. Who's in our league? Who's in our league? Do you know what? I can't remember who's in our league now. That's ridiculous, isn't it? My mind has gone blank. Rochdale would have been... I can't even think who's in our blooming league now.
This is when we need to be on video so people can see your face. You look totally stumped.
Walsall?
There we go. You got one. Three more guesses.
Crikey.
No, like, not
obviously, Bradford. I can't say Bradford, can I?
No.
Northampton?
No. Two more guesses.
I guess I've got left. Oh, crikey. Who is in our league? I can't even think who is in our league now.
Go through fixtures from the start of the season.
Swindon?
No.
Not Swindon?
Not Swindon.
Tranmere? What?
Tranmere, there we go. You got two. Warsaw and Tranmere. The other three?
Please.
Grimsby Town.
Boo.
Stockport County.
Oh, damn, he won that game as well.
And the one that I thought you were going to get... Gillingham.
Yeah, I forgot about Gillingham because they're literally so far down the table, I don't look that far anymore.
No, it's kind of like their approach to the opposition goal. It's so far away from where they are. Bless them. I watched them against Leicester. Blimey, they don't like attacking, do they? Anyway.
That was interesting because I thought Gill's kind of... And he's getting quite excited at the moment of what players they should be looking at. And of course, he's gone from not looking at non-league players to looking at obviously the top end of players. I mean, you're like, oh no, it's one of those again, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh well. Oh well. Right. So very quickly then, we host Bradford on Saturday, Stu. Very quickly, they are fifth. They've lost four of their last six, including losing at home to Rochdale. On Tuesday night, bad defeat that one. They've lost their last two away from home. Their last win away from home was against Sutton, which was on November the 12th. Although they've not actually played that many games in that time for various reasons. Mark Hughes is their manager, has been for almost a year now. They've brought in Matt Derbyshire. What a blast from the past that is. Yeah. And Thierry Nevers, who was a winger that was on loan at Newport, came down to Plough Lane just on Boxing Day, but he's now joined Bradford instead. And they've got Dion Pereira, who's on loan from Luton, so you know he's going to be a good player. What do you think? Prediction?
Yeah, hey, look, losing at home to Rochdale, you know, and they're 1-0 up and out as well. But yeah, I think Valley Parade is difficult for them, isn't it, in terms of expectation and stuff like that. But do you know what, home game, it's difficult, isn't it, because I still think we're a bit bare. We don't know if ever Sal's going to be playing and stuff like that. My gut feeling is probably a draw on that side. It would also be nice to welcome back Glenn Hodges.
Of course.
His assistant or coach with Bradford. That would be really good as well. But yeah, a draw, just because I think, unless we get some players in, hey, look, we're recording this on Wednesday night and there's not been anything, well, just nothing, is there? You know, we had two trialists playing in a friendly with Barnet on Tuesday, but unless we get some players in early, but you know, look, Zach Robinson's out an extra week, Aaron Cosgrave as well. So I'm not overly confident. 1-1.
Okay. I think our home record's not too bad against Bradford, but I think both teams, again, it might be a case of both teams quite happy for a draw. But probably, as I say, Stu, we'd probably 1-1 again. Yeah. Just same old problems. Tight at the back. Not creating enough up top. Their top scorer, Andy Cook, seems to be just coming back from a little bit of a spell out. So we'll see. He's always a danger. Anyway, elsewhere, Gillingham versus Hartlepool. Massive game at the foot of League Two. And I think if Gillingham don't win that, then I think we're probably saying goodbye to them. But
Yeah, and do you know what's interesting? Colchester spent quite a bit, or got some players in recently. They're getting themselves out. So played it well against us, didn't they? So there is not a gap, but yeah, they've got to be careful. They've got to be careful. That, you know, Rochdale winning was also really good. So don't want to get too detached, do they? But thankfully, they are miles away from us, and we haven't got to look that far down at the moment.
No. Oh, well, that is it. Sadly, Stu, we've run out of time, so we're going to have to stop. We're going to have to scrap our Prince Harry conversation. I know everyone was really looking forward to that because, you know, a subject that doesn't really get much attention. But hey, we try and highlight the issues, but sometimes just not got the time. So I will say thank you very much for joining me, Stu.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Updates from the games with Bradford will be on our Twitter at 9YRSPodcast. 9 Years TV will return from about 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, bringing you all the build-up and team news from the fixture on YouTube and the AFC Wimbledon YouTube and Facebook channels. That is it. Alexa Bliss. Oh, well, how much longer are we going to be able to say Alexa Bliss, Stu? Because if the WWE sells out to Saudi Arabia, that's it. I'm not giving them any mentions ever again.
Not saw that.
Yeah, that could be interesting. It'd be very interesting. Anyway, for now, we can still say it. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2 plus 2 equals 4, and we shall speak to you again next week.